With Cap Radio special coverage on this Tuesday after a holiday weekend, I'm Randall White, and today we're focusing on the topic of reopening California's economy again, something we touched on a couple of weeks ago, but also something that has evolved significantly in a very short period of time. In fact, this afternoon, Governor Gavin Newsom announced a further opening to include barbershops and hair salons in 47 of the state's 58 counties, including Sacramento. This comes after a busy weekend for many restaurants throughout the area, as those restrictions were also recently lifted. And just yesterday, the State Department of Public Health announced indoor shopping is now possible, too. Kathleen Ronayne with the AP asked the governor today if all of this is too much too fast, whether the governor has enough time in between to measure any possible ramifications. And here's part of his response, and I want to note for transparency, it's been heavily edited for length only.
Our testing has substantially increased. And over the weekend, we were actually hitting one of our long-term goals of getting over 60,000 tests a day. The fact is, we remain to see positivity rates stable over a consistent period of time. The procurement of PPE, which all of you have written a lot about, has made huge impact in our capacity to deliver the appropriate protective gear across sectors of our economy. Our tracing is also making progress. All these things stack up.
And Governor Newsom did follow that up by indicating the state does expect to see some spikes in COVID-19 numbers following these openings. And if there's anything in excess of what they expect, then restrictions could be put back in place. Of course, restaurants are the most visible of the newly relaxed rules for many of us. Did you dine in at a restaurant this weekend? I went to a tamale truck at the Oak Park Farmers Market. That's about the extent of my comfort zone right now. Cap Radio's healthcare reporter Sammy Caola was on the restaurant beat this past weekend. Sammy, you focused on Midtown. Were restaurants mostly following the guidelines from what you saw?
Surprisingly, yes. Almost everywhere I went, servers were wearing face coverings. Now, that is a recommendation from the state and the county. There isn't really the same requirement for customers. But you'll be happy to know that if you go to a restaurant, most likely the person giving you your food and drink is wearing a face covering that really protects them and you. It more protects you because they won't be breathing directly on you. But, you know, they're worried too. So if you're a customer and you're going to go eat at a restaurant, they really do want you to wear one to protect your server.
You caught up with a couple
face coverings, yes. And also, groups are being spaced apart. Groups are being spaced apart really well. I would say people aren't packed into restaurants right now.
You caught up with a couple of guys that had face masks with them, but they weren't wearing them, right?
Yeah, they seem to have put them down to be able to drink their beers. These are two customers at Midtown's Cantina Alley.
So I see that both of you brought a mask to lunch today.
We did, yep.
But you're not wearing them because?
Nobody else is.
So a little bit of peer pressure there. Nobody else was wearing masks, so why should they?
Right. And I think the concept is you're sitting with your immediate people, right? With a friend or a family member, and you've said, okay, I can be close to this person. I just don't want to be close to all the strangers in this restaurant. And so I think restaurant staff are doing a good job keeping separate groups apart.
Sammy, what are the experts saying? Is it safe to go to a restaurant right now? Where is it on the scale of, from safe to not safe at all?
I mean, like anything, it's whatever degree of risk that you want to accept, right? So I talked to Sacramento County Health Services Director Peter Bielenson. He said it's low risk, but it's not no risk. NPR has ratings for risk, and they have medium to high in terms of eating indoors at a restaurant. As we know, COVID-19 is easily spread through the air, and so it's generally considered safer to be outside where those droplets can dissipate than it is to be inside. So, you know, I wouldn't necessarily go in a tiny hole-in-the-wall restaurant. But I actually did eat at Midtown Cantina the other day while I was working. I was starving. I really needed a taco. And so I went, and it's an open-air restaurant. And, you know, they had me sanitize my hands when I walked in the door. I washed them, wiped down my table, and they offered me hand sanitizer to keep with me at the table for, you know, after I received my food, I could then sanitize my hands again. So, you know, I felt pretty good about it.
How about using the restroom? I think that's something that's gone through a lot of people's minds. If you're at a restaurant for any length of time, the odds are you might need to.
Yeah. And I actually asked Peter Bjelanson directly about this.
It's interesting. More and more information is coming out, including in the last couple of days, that actually touching things, which are called fomites, these are objects that are inert. In other words, elevator buttons, rails, things like that, including sinks in the bathrooms, that is very, very unlikely way to get this virus. By far, the most common spread of the virus is face-to-face contact, less than social distancing, which is why we keep harping on the social distancing to no end and ad nauseum.
Wow, Sammy, that comes as a surprise to me. I've been so careful to use my, you know, my elbow for walk signals, and every little thing I touch, I put some hand sanitizer on right away, but apparently that's not that big of a risk.
Yeah, not the main concern. That's what the latest research is showing. That's less important than staying away from people.
So let's go back to the restaurant workers. One reason to wear a mask when you're ordering and that sort of thing to keep them safe. How are they feeling? Do they feel like they're being put at risk just so they can make a living?
You know, I talked to nearly a dozen restaurant workers on Saturday, and some of them were really excited to be back. You know, they were thrilled. They missed their customers. They missed their work. They missed talking to people. But I did talk to at least one who said, you know, I don't really want to be here, but I have to be here. You know, I need this income. So, you know, I think there's a range. I talked to somebody who pours wine at a winery, and he said, well, I'm not going to lean in over you and pour your glass, right? I'm going to pour it, place it, and step back. So they're all finding workarounds. And, you know, I talked to Marvin Maldonado. He owns the Federalist Public House. And here's what he said you could do as a customer.
Serving used to be just about, you know, serving and bringing food and setting it down. And now it's, you know, we're going to set it here. You can slide it to the center. If you can take your dirty dishes and slide it to the edge so we can grab them, we don't have to reach over you. It's a cooperative environment now. And it's a lot of things that we're trying to just think through. And maybe we're overthinking some things, but maybe we're not. And, you know, we're hoping that, you know, people respond well to that.
Marvin's point is such a no-brainer, but I wouldn't have thought of it. Just that little step of pushing your plate to the edge of the table so that the server doesn't have to reach in and get that much closer.
Yeah, and you can actually find a whole list of practical tips from restaurant workers. If you go to capradio.org, we basically did a guide to how to be a polite patron.
How to be a good patron. As someone who worked in restaurants years ago, there should have been a how to be a patron list for years.
A lot of it is just patience, is just knowing that these restaurants have had to scramble to follow these new guidelines. And there's a lot of changes they have to make. Even things like they can't use menus that are reusable. They can't have shared menus. So at Midtown Cantina, they have a QR code that you scan to look at the menu, which I thought was really interesting. But, you know, it takes a lot to get that kind of thing off the ground. So if you decide to go eat at a restaurant, just give your server a little slack.
Right. Cap Radio's Sammy Caola, our healthcare reporter, but at least for the weekend, she was, well, it's still healthcare, but more the dining
scene.
Everything
is healthcare now.
Everything is healthcare. Everything. Sammy, thank you. Let's shift now to outdoor activities, which most research indicates is safer than indoor gatherings. And a Sacramento favorite, of course, is river rafting. Cap Radio's environment reporter Ezra David Romero went to the American River, where else, where people were eager to get in the cold water and in some cases against warnings as large groups. Ezra, Memorial Day weekend, it's traditionally huge crowds there at the river. It seems like coronavirus didn't really slow things down. What'd you see?
Yeah, I would agree. It was sort of like two different worlds there at the river. There were like the followers, and then there were all the rule breakers. And rafting companies implemented a lot of guidelines and safety protocols. Like, you know, they have hand sanitizer stations. They fog their buses with a chemical that kills about 95% of germs. And then they limit the number of rafts every hour. It was about like 10 or 12 on Sunday. And then customers are not supposed to link up like to other rafters, and they're not supposed to like party on the sides, which is sort of the point a bit of these rafting trips. And so, but there are some consequences. That's according to Kent Hansen with American River Rafting Company off Sunrise Boulevard. I spoke to him on Sunday. Let's hear what he has to say.
If you break any of the COVID-19 rules or protocols, you can get your entire deposit kept. We collect a $100 deposit for each trip. Also, we would ask that you do not return this year. In addition to that, rangers are out there patrolling. They are well aware of our rules, and they have the ability to call us and find out who is in charge of which raft based on the number on the front of the boat. If they call us for information, we will work with them to let them know who the responsible person is for that raft. And they will be citing people for things that are disobeying stay-at-home order as well.
Ezra, did you see anyone getting cited?
I didn't see anyone getting cited, and he said that I think there had been one person that got in trouble for it. But I was told that there might even be some like kayakers out there, like encouraging people to safely socially distance.
Mm-hmm. So are these rafting companies, they're working hard apparently to keep people safe, but you know, maybe citations weren't issued, but what did you see? Were people following protocol?
Well, that's the hope, but they weren't. You know, there were some people, there were some families like with masks on carrying their tubes, but then there were just like hordes of people on either side of the river hanging out, drinking, getting into their rafts that were all stuck together that fit like 10 to 12 people. And yeah, so let's hear some of that sound of what it sounded like there.
They all fit on like a raft for two, for six people.
Got too many things that I could.
Ah, responsible social distancing.
They might make you guys on time.
Oh,
no.
We'll see. Yeah, who's they?
There's some rangers on kayaks.
Rangers on kayaks.
Yeah.
Not let us tie together?
Yeah, they're not letting people tie together down there. But,
everybody is.
But I won't poo-poo your party.
Ezra, they don't sound especially concerned. And that was nice
they
of
weren't.
You to not, step on their party. But it also sounds potentially dangerous for you as the reporter. How did you go about reporting this story where you could get close enough to people and hear what they had to say? And also in that environment, maybe they don't want a reporter around.
Well, I did a lot of the reporting the week prior. I talked to some of the sources and things like that. I forgot my boom pole, but I stood far away from people. I wore a mask. I have hand sanitizer in my little pouch. You know, I just made sure that like if I was with around this group of people, I was not there very close to them. And it's sort of surprising because, you know, county health officials, California state parks, all these people are saying to not travel far distances to recreate. But most of the people I talked to, whether they were on the yellow rafts rented or the rafts like that they got from like Big Five or something, were all from the Bay Area, San Jose, San Francisco, Oakland. So Bay Area loves the American River, but they're traveling far to get there, which is sort of breaking the rules.
Yeah. Ezra, you are our environment reporter. How has the COVID-19 situation changed your relationship with the outdoors?
Well, mostly I just see it through this window in front of me outside. I see downtown Sacramento, but you know, I talked to a guy at Sac State about this. His name is David Roloff, and he teaches recreation therapy. And his whole idea is to, you know, evaluate risk. So he says it's important to get outside, which I've been doing, but you have to be safe about it. Here he is.
I just think it's going to be a really interesting season. It's going to be a time of balancing risks with benefits. And I think, especially for parents and what to do with kids, they're probably not going to have the typical soccer camp, summer camp opportunities. And so they're going to have to just be creative.
Yeah, and getting creative. I went to the river four times this weekend, and you know, once for this story, once for a hike in Auburn, and then twice on the lower American River. And each time I pretty much had to make a judgment call, is like, is it worth it for me to go here? When I went to Auburn, we wanted to go to Lake Clementine. That's a very popular state park hike, and it was so packed, like hundreds of cars and people and bikes. And so I had options on my phone that I already screen grabbed the hikes for. I knew where I was going to go. And our second option only had four cars, and we only passed like seven people. We had masks and things like that. And then on the lower American River, we took our bikes and we found little areas where there's nobody. But after a few hours, people found us, and then we left after a little bit because they got too close.
All right, briefly, Ezra, so Auburn seems far, but what about a little farther yet, like Tahoe? You've reported extensively, of course, on the Tahoe region, and we're going to speak with a business owner in Tahoe City in just a bit, but what are you hearing about recreation in the Tahoe Basin? Can visitors expect changes, I'm sure?
Yeah, I mean, they're all sort of, I spoke with some people there last week, and they're sort of reimagining what recreation is going to look like in the Tahoe Basin. There's like a working group that's coming up with some signage and things like that. But there's also greater questions there about like camping and dispersed camping. Is it going to change the actual patterns of recreation in the Tahoe Basin? And could that mean more trash in the wilderness? Could that mean wildfire risk? There's all kinds of things like that that are looming.
Cap Radio's environment reporter, Ezra David Romero. Thank you, Ezra.
Thanks.
And as I mentioned, in just a bit, we're headed up to Tahoe to check in on a store that, despite relaxed rules, has no plan to open immediately. We'll speak with the owner to find out why. This is Cap Radio's special coverage. I'm Randall White. With Cap Radio's special coverage on this Tuesday after a holiday weekend, I'm Randall White, and today we're focusing on the topic of reopening California's economy, which has come a long way in a short period of time. Just yesterday, the state announced that in-store shopping can commence statewide, but just because it's now legal to invite customers into your store doesn't mean all store owners are willing to swing open their doors. Brendan Madigan is the owner of Alpenglow Sports. That's in Tahoe City, and he joins us now. And he's decided not to fully open just yet. Brendan, typically Memorial Day weekend would be a really big one for you, if not the biggest of the year. How did this year go?
Well, it didn't go in the traditional sense of the holiday. It's, you know, a great time of year for people to come up to Tahoe and summarize their homes and do a little clearance shopping, which unfortunately didn't happen in Tahoe City.
So what aspects of your business are in operation right now? Are you doing like online sales, or you've gotten rid of rentals, correct?
Correct. Yeah, we cut rentals off and went to a phone order model only shortly after ski resorts closed in mid-March. And we're also doing a lot of web sales also.
Do you think rentals will come back anytime soon?
We hope so. You know, we're just taking a conservative tract, taking the input from the governor and Placer County and then implementing our own sanity to that for our working staff.
Brendan, I know you were on the line for Ezra's segment just a moment ago. Did you hear him mention that the rafts go through this mist spray that kills 98% of germs or something like that? Is that what you would have to do if you rented?
I would imagine so. You know, and what we found with rentals is it's a low-hanging fruit for community stewardship that, you know, it hurts us financially, but we think it's the right thing to do to not offer that in the current environment.
For the people that live up at Tahoe, they're probably not much of a rental class anyway. They might own their own gear. So the rentals primarily come from out-of-towners?
Sure. Yep. I would agree with that. And there are a lot of out-of-towners. So it's a tough middle ground for us to not disappoint people while, of course, leaving money on the table. But we kind of feel like that's the right thing to do.
How is this sitting with the Tahoe community right now? I imagine maybe some pockets really want people back up there because it is bread and butter for so many communities, and others might be a little more protective. In the area where you are, you've got, you know, the Squaw Village, the village at Squaw. You've got Truckee, Tahoe City, and then the whole string of cities that lines the North Shore there over to Incline Village. Are you seeing a big difference between the different communities as to how they're reacting to all of this?
We are. You know, most notably, we're seeing a big difference in Truckee. It is a different county than we are situated in. And, you know, it's Tahoe's still busy. There's never a slow time in Tahoe anymore. Truckee is very bustling. There's a lot of stores that are open. And, you know, we're not here to judge anyone else. We're just doing what we feel is right for the protection of our staff and our community.
But there is a a visible difference. If you're in Truckee or if you're in Tahoe City, it's much busier in Truckee. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. And it is, I would say, all the time. But it seems like the COVID curtain has been drawn back a little bit quicker there in Truckee.
Is there a store similar to yours in Truckee that people say, well, I don't need to go to this one in Tahoe City if he's not ready to open, I'll just hop over to Truckee?
Yeah, well, we've been in business for almost 42 years, so we've got a tremendous loyal customer base. There are stores in Truckee that do similar things to Alpenglow, you know, running shoes and hiking shoes and backpacking right now. But, you know, we feel like we're putting our best foot forward in the community, both for folks who live here and folks who travel here to second homes. And we're doing the responsible thing.
Things have changed so quickly. I'm never exactly sure where we are when it comes to the rules. So can somebody from outside the area get a hotel room or an Airbnb or something like that in the Tahoe area right now? Or is it still strictly locals?
Yeah, no, there's definitely been, you know, some lodging rentals for sure. It's upset a lot of locals that folks who own Airbnbs have continued to rent, even, you know, despite the mandates from Placer County. That's created some friction, you know, for sure in the community. But I think, you know, businesses are facing a tough predicament. You know, it's luckily we've been able to stand on the goodwill of our customers. We did a big gift certificate drive, which gave us some short-term financial infusion. But a lot of companies don't have that. So I sympathize and understand with having to reopen. I just hope everyone's doing it responsibly.
People encouraged the gift certificate or gift card situation for restaurants as well at the beginning of this whole pandemic to keep people afloat. I understand yours was incredibly successful. It was like $100,000.
It was. It was, you know, one of the most beautiful acts of humanity I think I'll ever get to see in my life. You know, we've never made a plea like that, but, you know, some simple cash flow analyses showed us that we needed an infusion of capital. And, you know, as a sole business owner, I can't absorb any more debt. So that was the best way that we could do it.
Now, how does that work moving forward if everyone pays with the gift cards and then there's no cash coming in, you know, during that period?
Sure. Yeah, it's, you know, I think it's trading one problem for another, but luckily the other problem is dispersed over time. And we have some, you know, just amazing customers who offered us loans and we politely said, you know, thank you, but we're going to fight through this as rugged individualists. And then they turned around and bought, you know, $10,000 gift certificates. And I know they're not going to use them until this clears. They're just doing it because they want to support us, which is amazing.
Wow. So I want to get back to the visitor aspect, because I know a lot of people listening right now have been chomping at the bit to get up to Tahoe. A lot of people like to just, you know, do it several times a year. And I'm wondering, what can people do to be the best citizen possible when they get up there? Like how, you know, if they are going to come, whether it's against state rules or not, what can they do to lessen the impact on you and your neighbors?
Yeah, it's a really fair and timely question. There's no denying that people will continue to come, have come since COVID hit, not only from Sacramento and the Bay Area, but from all around the world. And with that, you know, is increased risk for the local community. And we're a tourist-driven destination, so we can't deny the fact that visitors turn the economic wheel here. And, you know, we don't fault people for wanting to come. We just hope they do it responsibly.
All right, Brendan Madigan, he's the owner of Alpenglow Sports in Tahoe City. Best of luck to you moving forward. You know, I hope this all works out.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And you've been listening to Cap Radio special coverage. I'm Randall White. We'll be back again tomorrow with another show talking about agriculture. We'll talk to you then.